Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life.
Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I get to interview a doc that I went to school with at Bastyr. How exciting is that? So his name is Dr. John Neustadt, and he's the founder and president of Nutritional Biochemistry Incorporated, otherwise known as NBI, with his website being NBI Health. He's spent 2 decades as a doc, a researcher, a writer, an entrepreneur, creating solutions that improve people's health. And boy, is he doing some great stuff out there, especially in the realm of bone health. And he has a new book called Fracture Proof Your Bones, A Comprehensive Approach to Osteoporosis. And today we're going to be talking all about this overlooked aspect of health. It is not that you need a DEXA scan. It's not that you need to know your bone density. It's more the whole concept of how easy would it be for you to fracture a bone? We're overlooking this. And Dr. John and I are going to talk about this today and get to the bottom of it and give you some insight as to what it can be really, really useful in Game Changers to help you to fracture-proof your bones. So let me introduce you to a fellow classmate of mine, Dr. John Neustadt. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Dr. John Neustadt. And I'm so excited because he and I went to Bastyr together. So I actually have someone that knows me and knows that I actually went to Bastyr and I'm not just making this all up. So Dr. John, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you. I was so excited to schedule with you and connect. And just before we started recording, I know we were talking about different professors we knew and had classes together with. And of course, what's been going on with our lives in the intervening, you know, what, decade and a half now. I mean, it's been incredible how many years it's been.
It's time just flies. I can't believe it. And in this case, you know, we've all kind of found our little niches, right? Or niches, however people like to say it. And in your case, you found bones and you've got your new book. And folks, I mentioned it in the intro, Fracture Proof Your Bones. This is Dr. John's like amazing book that really had me. And I'm going to do a little clip on this part. Look at all those bookmarks there, guys. I went nuts with it. And the big deal here is he goes way back on why he found bones to be so fascinating, but also why we're overlooking them and why we really need to talk about them. And that is why I wanted him on the podcast today. So Dr. Neustadt, tell me what it was exactly that got you interested in bones and why you kind of took a huge deep dive into it to the point where you wrote a book and you even have a supplement company that has products for folks specifically on this.
Well, first of all, please call me John. It feels super weird, you know, calling each other doctor. yeah, and I would say bones found me more than I found bones. One of our mentors and professors we had, one of the founders of our university, Dr. Bill Mitchell, said to us in our advanced therapeutics class, we were in our final year, and a student asked in medical school, should they specialize? Mm-hmm. And his answer was, our patients will find us. And if we listen well enough, we'll actually hear them and understand what services we need to provide, where we need to put our time and our emphases. And what happened was I started clinical practice and I started getting patients with osteoporosis. I thought I was doing a great job. Their bone mineral density was going up. My mother-in-law still has osteoporosis. She was seeing a conventional trained medical doctor and she was on the Fosamax oral bisphosphonate. Her bone density was going up. I was also working with her, you know, a little bit at the time, but tracking mostly her bone density. That's what I was primarily focusing on, as was every other clinician that I knew and mm-hmm. with whom I'd spoken. And then she fell and broke her hip. And I thought to myself, what's going on here? And I started looking more and more into the research and realized that since the 1990s, the literature has shown that a bone density test predicts less than half of people who will break a bone. In fact, it's not that predictive at all. It only predicts 44% of women who will fracture and only 21% of men. And in fact, every organization that's looked at the research has correctly concluded that fracture risk depends on factors largely other than bone density. So it's actually a very minor part of the overall puzzle. And breaking a bone is the most dangerous thing about osteoporosis. So that's what we want to focus on, is what can we do to reduce somebody's risk? So I started researching and going down that rabbit hole, and quickly realized that not only is the clinical approach wrong, mostly wrong, but also there weren't the products that I needed to work with my patients to help them as best I could in terms of their bones, and then also in clinical practice, other areas of their health. And so I created a company, NBI, to create the products that had the dose and the combination of nutrients that I needed to help my patients, because it didn't exist. And all of that, the company, my research into osteoporosis, the book, my lecturing at medical conferences, I'm now on the corporate advisory roundtable for the Bone Health and Osteoporosis Foundation, and on, it just started to grow from that, those experiences, decades ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I think your story that you're telling is very similar to what we see. And for a lot of folks who are listening to this podcast right now, maybe they found out that they have osteoporosis. Maybe they've even fallen and broken a bone, or they have family members. So they're caregivers for family members that have had broken bones. And they're thinking to themselves, yeah, they were taking vitamin D like I was told to give them. And they were taking calcium, maybe some magnesium. And it's incredible. Maybe they're even working out. So a lot of folks right now probably heard you say that the conventional medical system, and I would say even the naturopathic medical system to a point, we might have had a step up in certain areas, but really we're overlooking and we're getting it wrong in certain areas. Where would you say, obviously supplementation and your products, that's one thing, and we're going to dive into that. Where else would you say that we're getting things wrong when it comes to approaching bones?
So in my book, I take people through developing an action plan and what they can do to holistically look at all of the pieces. So what I like to do first is evaluate, are there hidden dangers, hidden bone destroyers in their life? Because if something's actually destroying the bone, anything we do is going to make it more difficult to help them. Right. One of the most common things, because so many people are on them, are medications, both prescription and over-the-counter medications. Many of the most commonly used ones destroy bones and increase the risk for fractures. Two common ones that are not on most clinicians' radar and are not in the general public isn't aware of are the antidepressants, specifically those that affect serotonin, like Prozac, Lexapro, Cymbalta. Those are well-documented destroyers of bone. In fact, people who are on the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor category of antidepressant medications, the research has documented that for every 19 people taking them for 1 to 5 years, one person will be expected to break a bone. That's how dangerous they are to bones. And yet it's commonly overlooked. And people are on them for years and years. In fact, I think it's almost 24% of women 60 years and older are on those medications. And that is one of the highest risk categories also for osteoporosis. So it's not a good situation. The other category are acid blockers. The proton pump inhibitors like Prilosec or Protonix, those also damage bone. The other category of acid blockers do as well, but they don't seem to be as damaging. So it's those proton pump inhibitors that some research has shown, if you're on them and people are on them for years, even though they've never been FDA approved for long-term use, if you're on them for 4 years, there's up to a 60% increased risk for hip fracture. And a hip fracture is the most dangerous type of fracture. If you have osteoporosis and break a hip, there's up to a 36% chance that you're going to be dead within a year. And if you're one of the lucky ones who survive, there's a 50% chance that you'll never regain your full pre-fracture level of comfort, because you'll have chronic pain and discomfort moving forward. And a significant number of those people never actually regain what's called their activities of daily living. They have difficulty dressing themselves, going to the bathroom without assistance, you know, going to the store and shopping, things like that. So anything we can do to stop the damage to bones is important. And in fact, in my book, I instruct people, you know, make a list of all the medications you're taking and take them not just to your doctor, because doctors are great at prescribing, but many doctors won't know this information. And it's important to ask them. But one of the most underutilized healthcare professionals in our country are pharmacists. They are brilliant. They are well-educated. They are the experts in medications. And I recommend people get to know their local pharmacist and actually take the list of those medications to their pharmacist as well and ask them about it, because a pharmacist has quick access to databases where they can, if they don't know off the top of their head, they can easily look it up. So then they also have that information when they go to their doctor to discuss it.
That's the first place I start.
Then it's, okay, what can we do to build bone? What can we do to help promote healthy bone, maintain strong bones, and reduce fracture risk? And the research is clear. It's a combination of factors. Again, bone density is only a minor part of it. What we want to look at is what are the factors that are consistently shown to increase osteoporosis risk and damage bone. The most consistent predictor of fracture is somebody's gait or how they walk, whether they have muscle weakness in their legs, essentially their balance, because 95% of fractures occur because somebody falls. So anything we can do to reduce their risk of falling is going to reduce their risk for falls and fall-related injuries like fractures and concussions and getting cut and bruises and all of those things that nobody wants.
Right.
So exercise is part of that. But people don't have to go pump iron at the gym. They don't have to go be this type A personality that gets out there and goes crazy and starts training for a triathlon. Not at all. There's simple things that people can do in terms of exercise that are effective. One is, I talk about, and I was actually lectured at a medical conference recently, I demonstrated this from the stage. It's called the stork exercise, where you literally just stand on one foot while you brush your bottom teeth. That's about a minute. And then you switch and you brush your top teeth for the next minute on the other foot. You can steady yourself on the sink if you need to a little bit. And that'll start to build a little bit of balance. There are things that people can simply do to add some exercise and movement into their life. Walking just 7,000 to 7,500 steps a day. You don't need 10,000 steps. Walking that amount has been shown to reduce all-cause mortality by 30 to 50%, which means it reduces your risk from dying from anything, including osteoporosis and fractures. You can do Pilates, you can do yoga, but it's important to work with somebody who understands how to safely work with a client who has osteoporosis, because if done incorrectly, it can actually increase your risk for fracture. So there are questions that I talk about in the book that are important to ask of those exercise specialists. If you're going, for lack of a better term, you know, if you're going to a class, to make sure that they're doing it safely. Mm-hmm. So that's important. Exercise is important. Diet, of course, is important. Most people are not eating a healthy diet. The standard American diet is the major cause of chronic diseases in this country. The Mediterranean style diet, which is a plant forward diet, lots of whole foods, lean proteins, has been shown is associated with a over 20% reduction in fracture risk and a reduction in osteoporosis risk as well. Study after study after study have shown great benefits for not just osteoporosis and bone health, but for all sorts of health throughout the body, reducing the risk for diabetes, obesity, cancer, death from cancer. And the list goes on and on, all just from eating. We've all got to eat anyway. So I'm a big advocate of eating to promote your health instead of eating to feed your disease. And the Mediterranean diet is it is the most extensively researched and the best diet for overall health as well as bone health. One thing though that's missing for many people, even though there's a high protein keto craze now in this country, is protein. Most people, as they get older, are not getting enough protein. And when you don't get enough protein, you end up getting muscle wasting. And when your muscles get smaller and they get weaker, it increases your chance for falling and fractures. And there's a lot of protein in bone. Most people just think of the minerals in bone because of a bone mineral density. But there are over 200 different proteins in bone. And so it's important to get enough protein to feed that bone as well. And their recommendations, you know, how much you should get. You should get about 1.3 to 1.5 grams per kilogram body weight per day. It's a simple calculation people can make to understand how much they should be eating. So I talked about exercise. I talked about diet. One thing that's often overlooked is sleep. Mm-hmm. Not getting enough sleep, getting less than 6 hours, you know, 6 hours or less of sleep per night is associated with an increased risk for osteoporosis. So that's important. Dietary supplements are important because there are supplements out there that have been shown to maintain bone strength and reduce fractures. Here's the caveat. Here's the important thing to realize. It doesn't matter what anybody is recommending to you, whether it's a medication, whether it's a supplement. The question that people need to ask is, has this been shown to reduce fractures in clinical trials? With respect to nutrients in dietary supplements, there are only four that have actually been shown to maintain strong bones as indicated by reducing fractures. Now, there are companies out there that have stuff on their website and have marketing literature that they're saying the nutrients in our product or our product improves bone density. But as you now know, that's not the most important thing. It's one piece of the puzzle, but it's a very small piece of the puzzle, and it doesn't correlate well to fractures. So there are only four nutrients that have been shown to reduce fractures: calcium and vitamin D by about 20%, 18-20%. And with MK4, a specific form of vitamin K2, there are two types of vitamin K2 commonly found in dietary supplements, MK4 and MK7. Both will promote healthy bone density. However, MK7 has never been shown in clinical trials as the endpoint that they were evaluating has never been shown to reduce fractures. MK7 has not. MK7 has not. MK4... there are over 7,000 volunteers that have been studied for years. This has been studied for decades. The nutrient has been studied for decades, shown repeatedly to not just promote healthy bone density, but to reduce fractures, and which is the best indicator for bone strength, by over 70%. And it's been so well studied that the Ministry of Health in Japan has supports its use for bone health.
Wow.
Now, and you've got to have the dose of 45 milligrams per day, which is completely safe. The fourth nutrient then is strontium. Strontium is a mineral. I'm not a fan of strontium for several reasons. First of all, strontium has been shown to reduce fractures, but mostly vertebral fractures. Most of the studies have not shown hip fracture reduction.
Interesting.
Interestingly, with strontium, there are a couple of things that people need to be aware of. It's a mineral, just like calcium is a mineral. And so when people go in for their bone density test, despite the limitations of the bone density test, they are important to get. It is one piece of the puzzle, and you want them to be accurate. But strontium, because it's a mineral and it incorporates into the bone, and the bone density test is an X-ray, meaning the X-rays go through the bone, they strike the minerals and bounce off the minerals, and the machine detects that. Because it's a mineral and it's heavier than calcium, it gives false bone density test results. So the actual test result you're getting is incorrect.
Interesting.
And the other thing was, in Europe, strontium is approved as a medication for osteoporosis in the form of strontium ranelate in some European countries. And there they know how to, because it's a medication, they know how to correct the machine on the bone density test to correct for that. But here in the US, they don't.
Wow.
And there is no strontium ranelate in the U.S. It's only strontium citrate as a dietary supplement. There are no clinical trials on strontium citrate. And look, it may work. I'm just saying there are no clinical trials showing that it does or doesn't.
Wow.
There are, but more than that, and most importantly to me, a review of the regulatory data and clinical trials was published a few years ago looking at strontium ranelate in Europe, because that's where they have the most data. And it showed that it actually increases the risk for dangerous blood clots. And these are blood clots that can form what are called thromboemboli in the lungs, you know, dangerous clots in the lungs, which can kill people, which can create strokes and heart attacks. And the researchers concluded that for every one person that's helped with strontium, for every one person that avoids a fracture with strontium ranelate, it's going to create a dangerous blood clot in another person.
Wow. Right?
So I, for those reasons, I'm not a fan, but I'm so convinced by the research with the MK4 and the combination of MK4 with calcium and vitamin D that, and my products, OsteoK and OsteoK Minis that I created for my patients have been on the market since OsteoK was launched in 2007. And OsteoK Minis a couple of years later. I'm so convinced by all of what I've learned working with those products, what I've learned as an expert in this topic of MK4 and bone health, that I have what's called a strong bones guarantee through my company, NBI, meaning that we guarantee that not only will the product stabilize or improve somebody's bone density within 6 months, but more importantly, it will maintain strong bones, meaning that if they break a bone, we will refund all their money for the qualifying purchases between their bone density tests.
Wow.
That's how convinced I am by the research.
You know, a lot of people can't say no to that. Anything that comes with a guarantee, you know, that's huge. But, you know, I mean, I was taking notes feverishly here because I have questions, because I know people will ask me certain things as you were talking. And the first one really comes back to the whole concept of diet. I like that you say plant forward, not plant based, because I think a lot of people are getting confused with all of the plant based plastic butters, as I like to call them, out there. Right. And I'd love for you to kind of speak to that a little bit in terms of plant forward means really eating more plants, not, I want to hear your statement there on all of the processed plant-based things that are coming out right now.
Well, I think you said it brilliantly. I'm a believer in whole foods. Is you should ideally be able to look at what you're eating and know where it came from.
Yeah.
And that's not 100%. I mean, I have kids and a family, and I enjoy my, you know, chips every once in a while and snacking and that sort of thing. But predominantly, the diet should be from real foods, foods that you can look at, plants that you can look at, know where they came from. And it oftentimes, though, requires people to transition into eating this way, because most people aren't eating this way. So I also don't believe that, you know, major changes are sustainable for most people. So doing so, moving into this pattern of eating gradually over a period of time that's comfortable for somebody, because it oftentimes requires shopping differently, having different spices, you know, cooking differently, looking at different ways to snack. It takes time. And the goal here is not to go on a diet. The goal is to learn how to eat to promote your health for the rest of your life, to create a new eating habit. And it took people have been eating how they've been eating typically for years or decades. And, you know, it takes some time to create new habits. So it is a plant forward diet, but it also doesn't mean that you should think that you could, that it's going to be restrictive and this whole list of don'ts and nots. And no, it's about what can you do to substitute things that you like to that are healthier and that are going to help you instead of hurt you.
Makes sense. The other thing that I know I'm going to get a question about, because it always happens, like kind of diet, and then it follows into, okay, well, this MK4 stuff, can I get that type of vitamin D in my food? Is there a way to get it? And you were saying 45 milligrams is the safe dosage. And I know a lot of folks are going to be like, how can I get 45 milligrams of this specific D in my diet? And I'm basically I want to hear your answer, because my answer sounds like impossible. So
it's just to be clear, it's a specific form of vitamin K2. It's not a vitamin D.
MK4. Did I say D? Oh,
you did, which is fine. That's okay. Just to be clear. And you can't get it that amount from food. It does exist in food. It's in dairy products. Mammals can produce MK4 from vitamin K1. We have the biochemistry that can do that, but not enough to get the doses that have been shown in clinical trials to work. So it does need to be in the form of a supplement. And MK4, the 45 milligrams per day is the amount shown in clinical trials to work, but it actually is safe at much higher doses as well. It's an extremely safe nutrient. In fact, the safety studies have shown that people would have to consume, I believe, over a kilogram to actually make it harmful, and people just won't be doing that. But clinical trials actually for other other cases and other situations have gone up all the way to 135 milligrams per day, because there are studies about MK4 isn't just good for maintaining strong bones, but it promotes healthy bone marrow. It's the only form of vitamin K that's been shown to do that. And what do I mean by that? It's been shown to actually support healthy platelet and red blood cell production and healthy production of the transition from our stem cells to mature cells in the bone marrow. So it has, like many nutrients, like nutrients in the body, our body typically will use one nutrient for many different things. And MK4 is not different. In fact, it's the most studied form of vitamin K2. And it's been shown to accumulate in the breasts, in the pancreas, in the intestines, in the different parts of the brain, which hints and suggests that it has other beneficial roles beyond just bone health.
Yeah, that's kind of, one of the things I wonder about a lot of these different nutrients, where can we build them up? Where can we hold them, especially the fattier soluble ones? Now, one of the things that came to me in terms of thinking about MK4 and thinking about fractures, a lot of people will be like, all right, doc, I just got diagnosed. I had my DEXA. I have osteoporosis. I want to turn this around fast. And a lot of my folks are going to be like, okay, how much can I take a certain extra amount to turn that around and then repeat my DEXA in a certain amount of time and see if I have reversed the process? So that's part one of my question. And then my part two is, if someone does have a fracture, say they're 40 years old and they broke their arm because they were skiing or something like that, can we use MK4 to regenerate that bone faster, speed up bone healing? So I'll let you answer.
Great questions. So on the first question, I would say that first of all, and I talk about this in the book and I counsel patients on this all the time, getting a diagnosis of osteopenia or osteoporosis and having the low bone density is scary. It's a scary diagnosis, especially if your doctor, as I've heard many, countless stories of, where their doctor is really scaring them about how dangerous it is. The reality is it's not an emergency. Take a deep breath. You have time to create your plan and educate yourself so you can make the best decision for yourself, whether it is a decision to take a medication or not, whether it's a decision to begin working on your diet or your exercise or your sleep or other aspects of health that I talk about in the book. There's time to create your plan. The clinical trial, and let me be clear, MK4 is a dietary supplement. It's a nutrient. So it's not approved by the FDA to diagnose, cure, prevent, or treat any diseases, but it powerfully promotes bone health. And what the clinical trials showed, most of the clinical trials have been 2 years of duration. And I think that's largely because a bone density test is not that sensitive in detecting changes in the minerals in the bone. And so they need to be spaced out about every 18 to 24 months to be able to detect those differences.
Okay.
And so the 2 years is where the majority of the data are, and the published research showing that MK4 over that period of time improves bone density. Now, it's not the type of situation where, you know, you go on for 12, 18 months and there's no improvement, and then suddenly there's a jump. I'm sure there's a gradual improvement over time. There is a clinical trial that did show improvement within 6 months, but I believe there's only one of those.
Okay.
I just want to add too with the MK4, because I talked about medications. It is the only nutrient that has been shown to stop and reverse bone loss in people on different medications like prednisone and another one called leuprolide, which is an androgen blocker type medication used for prostate cancer, used in polycystic ovarian syndrome. So that's the depth and the breadth of the research on MK4, not just in people who have had age-related bone loss, but people who have had bone loss from medications as well. All of that is published and has been published for decades.
Okay. And speeding up fracture. So if someone just breaks a bone.
So there is a clinical, I would say, yes, it does promote healthy healing if you do, and fast healing if you do have a fracture. Not only are there anecdotes and people who have reported back taking my products that it's improved their healing time and sped that up, and their orthopedist was just shocked. But there's a clinical trial, or not a clinical, there's an animal study, actually. I feel badly for the animals, but this is how medical research works. They actually fractured the femurs of the animals and gave them MK4, and it reduced, significantly reduced how long it took that break to heal compared to animals who had their legs broken. I believe they were rats, had their legs broken and were not given the MK4. So there is that research that exists to support that as well. There's another nutrient, however, that I think is, although it hasn't been shown to maintain strong bones as indicated by reducing fractures, I do think it's important for people to consider, and that's collagen. Mm. Because collagen there's a lot of collagen in bone, and it's the collagen that ultimately gives bone its strength. So promoting healthy collagen is important. There is a clinical trial showing that it's the given collagen to women who had what's called pre-osteoporosis or osteopenia, some bone loss, but not enough to be called osteoporosis, that it improved a laboratory marker that showed they were having less breakdown of collagen in the bone. So it was promoting that. And there is a study on collagen showing faster healing time, which is why it reminded me of the research when you asked about that from a fracture.
Wow.
So it's type one collagen, 5 to 10 grams per day. It really needs to be as a powder because you can't get that dosage from pills. I created a collagen product because of that research, and my customers were asking me about it. So those are the nutrients that melatonin actually has some intriguing research on it now too. It's been shown to improve bone density at 3 milligrams per night, but no fracture endpoint, meaning they haven't looked at its ability to necessarily reduce fractures. But melatonin, there are melatonin receptors in bone, interestingly.
I didn't know that.
And we know that sleep deprivation is a risk for osteoporosis. So mechanistically, it seems to make sense.
Well, and it also, I mean, if we think about it, as we get older, we do struggle to sleep. And as we get into the ages where we're starting to have more prevalent, you know, osteopenia turning to osteoporosis, like I'm going to use my dad, he's 86, for example. And, you know, he doesn't sleep regularly. Like most older adults, there's kind of like the cat naps throughout the day. And then at night he's up kind of every couple hours too. It makes me wonder, could there be something to that? process going on in that kind of pattern of sleeping too. I don't know if you've seen anything.
Well, the research shows as people get older, they tend to spend less time in the deeper stages of sleep, the stage 3 and 4, those deep stages where it's, you know, harder to wake up, or somebody shakes you or you shake somebody else, and, you know, noises just aren't, you know, waking you up as they would in the lighter stages of sleep. If you get woken up easily by slight noises, you're likely staying in that stage 1 or 2 stages of sleep instead of getting into those stages 3 and 4, which are the restorative stages of sleep that your body needs to heal. It's also involved in consolidating memory and really important. And as we get older, the research has shown that people spend less time in those deeper stages of sleep, which, again, you know, all of my, probably everything that I've done is because there have been clinical problems that I've had to try and solve. And people kept coming to me and saying, I've tried all these sleep supplements, nothing's working. So I hit books, I hit the research, spent a lot of time looking at it, and I created a product called Sleep Relief, which is the only biphasic time release product, because really there are two issues that people are having. People either, and they could have both. It's, you know, with sleep, you fall asleep and then you stay asleep. Mm-hmm. And some people may have difficulty with one and not the other. So stage 1 of Sleep Relief is a quick release stage to help people fall asleep. And then stage 2 is released over the next 4 hours, the nutrients, which is, you know, some melatonin, but some amino acids, herbs that then help people stay asleep. Or if they wake up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, they're not so groggy that they're at risk of falling, which, as you know from this conversation, is on my radar. Yeah. And then they're able to more easily fall back asleep if they were to wake up in the middle of the night. And then it wears off by the time morning arrives and people wake refreshed instead of groggy and hungover. Mm-hmm. And what happens with melatonin when people take melatonin to sleep is it wears off quickly. So they end up taking more and more and higher doses to get them to sleep throughout the night, even though that's not melatonin's job in the body. But they do that and then they feel groggy and hungover in the morning because they've taken too much.
Yeah. I've seen that over and over again. And then there's some people who it seems they just don't tolerate melatonin well in general. And I've tried extended release, you know, and I've tried the different versions of it. And I don't know what your opinion is on it when melatonin isn't tolerated, if we're looking more at something going on, brain, gut, et cetera.
What do you mean?
Sure. Usually it ends up being where someone will take it and they say they feel awful. Not the groggy, well, groggy on top of just feeling sick from it. And some people will say that they upregulate and they can't sleep at all with it. I would love to hear kind of what you've done to counter that.
So to counter that, what I've done is put in only a small amount of melatonin. So it's 1 milligram per tablet. And I like having the serving size of, you know, you could take up to 2 tablets or even more because they're safe. But on the bottle, it's, you know, 1 to 2 tablets at bedtime, because some people need a higher dose, some people need a lower dose, and some people react differently to different nutrients. So because it's the synergy of having the different nutrients together and not just relying on one single nutrient like melatonin and having to give a lot, I haven't actually had anybody come back and say that they think the melatonin was causing them any problems when it's packaged that way. So,
and I would agree that it's the synergistic effect. Melatonin alone, I sometimes will have issues. And yes, if someone's taking, like, I just see issues with 3+ milligrams, 1/2. If we cut something in half, it doesn't seem to cause as much of an issue. But I love to hear what other people are experiencing, you know, seeing in clinical practice, of course, as to what to do there. And, you know, and there's some cases where it's just not for you because maybe you have enough, you know, we could test that, right? And see, you know, there's always that case. My question now kind of goes to something that you had mentioned before about the MK4 and platelets. There are some folks that clinically will have low platelets in their labs. They'll have very just low, they're lethargic. They kind of have that borderline low anemia, but not enough for the conventional world to really hone in on it. Would you say that these folks and would benefit from having something like MK4 to see if it boosts up the platelets and boosts up energy and kind of just overall vitality is where I'm going with this question.
So I think it's definitely worth trying because there are clinical trials, up to phase two clinical trials on MK4 in people who have low platelets. They have conditions called acute myeloid leukemia, myelodysplastic, and myelodysplastic syndrome. Those are blood diseases where the body doesn't produce enough platelets. There's problems with the bone marrow, and so you get reduced platelets, you get reduced red blood cells, and you have all sorts of problems. And in those studies, the most sensitive indicator to show us that the MK4 is being helpful was an increase in platelets. That seems to be the first thing that improves. The average time to response was 6 weeks. So, and those are the clinical trials that went up as high as 135 milligrams per day. So I have had people taking the products to promote healthy platelet production and healthy blood production. And they typically will take the OsteoK minis because the only difference between the two products is the amount of calcium. Yeah. They both have the 45 milligrams of MK4. They both have 2000 IUs or units of vitamin D3. OsteoK, the original formula, has 1,000 milligrams per day of calcium. OsteoK Minis provides 400 milligrams per day of calcium. So that means that people could be taking the 45 milligrams of MK4 when they're trying to promote healthy bone marrow and healthy blood production and support those processes. And if they aren't getting the response at 45, they can double the dose to 90 and still not get too much calcium. And still be in that safe zone, because you don't really want to supplement with too much calcium. There can be some safety concerns with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's fascinating.
I think it's worth a try.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and I think for a lot of people, they'll be thinking about platelets now and then. There's that chronic bruiser person who, you know, tries the iron rich foods, still has the bruising, and we work on their gut. I'm thinking about them too. In this case, and could that be beneficial? And the other thing I was going to ask, just because a lot of people are going to ask me this one too, is, but don't we naturally produce vitamin K in our gut with our bacteria? And I want to speak to that a little, because as you and I both know, most of us probably have some dysbiosis and some things going on where we're not making optimal amounts of either K1 or K2 in general in the body. So I want to speak a little to that question that someone might ask me. Well, why can't I just take probiotics and hope that they're going to make the K I need?
Well, because they don't make that type of K. So there are two different major categories of vitamin K. The first category is vitamin K1 or phylloquinone, and that's produced by green leafy vegetables. Then the other category is vitamin K2. We've talked about two types of vitamin K2, MK4 and MK7. Bacteria make MK7. They don't make MK4. As I mentioned earlier, mammals like us make MK4. So your body is not going to, first of all, produce, or the bacteria won't produce the MK4. Your body doesn't convert MK7 to MK4, as far as I'm aware. I believe it's just the vitamin K1 that's converted to MK4. But even if it did, it can't produce it and transform it into the quantity shown in the clinical trials to work and to be helpful. So the gut bacteria is important, and dysbiosis is a major issue, because so many things take our healthy gut bacteria and transform it into unhealthy gut bacteria. Medications like antibiotics, repeated antibiotics usage, chronic stress, sleep deprivation, many other medications besides antibiotics also affect gut bacteria. Poor diet skews the bacteria, starts to transform it into an unhealthy mix, because there are lots of bacteria down there, lots of different species. And it's like little germ warfare, right? So you've got the healthy ones and it's part of our immune system. And then you have the ones that are pathogenic or that can cause diseases. And the ones that help us are killing off and keeping the bad ones population low or getting rid of them. And when we change the ratio of those or the amounts of those, we can get gut dysbiosis. We can get, you know, gas and bloating can occur, fatigue can occur, lots of symptoms. Now there's a relationship between unhealthy gut bacteria and mood, you know, poor mood and depression. So there's systemic effects that also can occur. But in terms of the vitamin K, it's really not something that I think about. What I think about with gut bacteria and nutrients is the healthy gut bacteria actually produce lots of nutrients that we can use, such as B vitamins, like GABA, which is a nutrient that helps calm things down, helps calm your nervous system down, and other nutrients as well, in addition to being part of our immune system. So looking at the microbiome, eating healthy, working with a doctor such as yourself or a practitioner if necessary, who can do testing and understand if there's a dysbiosis and put people on protocols for cleaning up their gut is important to overall health for sure.
Thanks for answering that, because I always get the questions about, well, can I just eat, you know, and get, or can I take a probiotic or eat a fermented food and get the same benefit? And I think there's a lot of misleading information out there on vitamin, the K vitamins in particular, and what's actually happening in the gut with those. So thank you for clarifying that for us, because I know a lot of folks will ask me about that. Now, I want to kind of turn the direction a little bit towards clinical practice and say someone's sitting here and they're going, well, my doc recommended Fosamax, or my doc recommended, and I'm kind of thinking the different injections, you know, all the different protocols that we can imagine out there for helping. What does someone want to be thinking about? I know, and of course, guys, in the book, he goes into this in great depth, but I want you guys to have one takeaway here from the podcast. If you have been recommended a medication or currently taking a medication, folks are probably going to be thinking, well, can I take MK4 too? Is it okay? So I'm going to have you kind of give the scoop on, if they're taking a medication, what can they do? How can they be proactive to make sure that they're getting everything they need for their bone health?
So absolutely, MK4, calcium and vitamin D, the Osteo-K, the Osteo-K minis, they are safe to take with all of the FDA-approved osteoporosis medications. And there are a lot of customers, and I've had my patients who are on osteoporosis medications take those dietary supplements as well. So there may be a synergistic effect, meaning there's added benefit to doing that. But with the osteoporosis medications, what's important to know about those is that most of them are just stopping the breakdown of bone. So the most common ones, the bisphosphonate category of medications, those work by poisoning a specific cell in the bone called an osteoclast. An osteoclast breaks down old bone. And then there's another type of cell in bone called an osteoblast, and that builds new bone. And in healthy bone, they're both working. You need both for healthy bone. It's called a process called bone remodeling, where old bone is broken down and recycled and new bone is created. In fact, about every 10 years, you have all new bone. It's called bone turnover. And that's happening throughout our body, tissues throughout our body, you know, our skin, cells in our intestine. You know, it's a process that we go through throughout our life in different areas of our body. So what the MK4 is doing, what the research is showing, is it is promoting healthy bone production. So it can have, it works off different mechanism in different ways of affecting bone health than the medications do.
Very cool. Very cool. And I think that's something important for folks to think about, you know, the osteoclasts, if we're poisoning cells, is that a good thing? Something to think about there. We'll leave that as food for thought. Like you had mentioned, the bone remodeling is a good natural process that happens.
Well, and I think the way for people to answer that question is to keep, when it comes to bone health, keep it very simple. And that is the question is, does a medication reduce fractures? Because it's all about fractures, not just improve bone density. All osteoporosis, FDA approved osteoporosis medications improve bone density, but not all of them reduce fractures equally. And there's a whole chapter in my book about medications and which ones, if you've never had a fracture before and you have osteoporosis, most medications don't prevent both vertebral and hip fractures from occurring. If you've already had a fracture with osteoporosis, then there are more medications that do work and can be helpful. And it just, that chapter helps people understand again how they can talk to their doctor. And if they are recommended a medication, what questions to ask? And then what does the research show are the best questions given their diagnosis and their medical history? Meaning, have they had a previous fracture with osteoporosis or not?
And fracture, you know, guys, just like John started talking about in the beginning here of the podcast, and fracture is the most important thing to be thinking about because it's tied to your longevity. It's tied to your overall health. More fracture, the more the chance of having a fracture, the less the longevity is going to be. And in this case, I mean, this is something that a lot of folks were not thinking about, that fracture risk. And I'll be honest, I'm going to call myself out. I wasn't necessarily thinking about it in that aspect. I was thinking about grab bars, like you had mentioned in the book, and thinking about rugs and different things in the way to prevent it in an environment. But I wasn't thinking about making the body's environment less prone to fracture. So
very, very well said. And making sure your house is fracture proofed. And there's, you know, talk about that in the book as well. There's a chapter on that to reduce the risk for falling is important. But again, anything we can do, and I think you said it so eloquently, to strengthen our own body, strengthen our own bones, to maintain strong bones and reduce the risk for breaking them is crucial, not just for longevity, because it's true, if you break a hip with osteoporosis, there's up to a 36% chance you're going to be dead in a year. But many people who break a hip actually never regain their full level of activity and pain-free lifestyle they had previously. And if you break a hip, your risk for dying is elevated for 10 years after. So you want to be proactive. You want to take charge of your health. You want to become educated about this and create the best plan for you so you can make the best decisions for your own healthcare.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, so obviously we want you to go over and we got to get the website and everything. So we'll get this started here, at least Fracture Proof Your Bones by Dr. John Neustadt there. What is the best website for folks to find that on? Is that the nbihealth.com site?
They can go to mbihealth.com. The book is there, as well as my products. And for your listeners, they can get 30% off all NBI products if they use the coupon code NBI30 during checkout. The book is also available on Amazon, both in print as an ebook and an audiobook if they want to hear me narrate it. I read for the audiobook. Awesome. Which was a very interesting learning experience.
I can imagine. But it's fascinating. It's a fascinating book. And guys, I really loved it. And of course, you'll hear more from me on it. Now, Dr. John, is there anywhere else that folks can interact with you here? Like what you're finding in latest research, updates, things of that nature? Is there anywhere else folks can find you?
So, So first of all, at nbihealth.com, make sure to sign up for my newsletter because I am putting out articles and blogs regularly. And there's tons of free information, articles and on the website as well. There is my Facebook page, LinkedIn, TikTok, the different social media channels. And that's all linked to at the bottom of the website as well. All those links are on there as well. The products also are available through Fullscript. You and I were talking about that. Sure. They're distributed by the largest distributor to healthcare providers in the country. So through Emerson Ecologics and Fullscript, the products are also available if your practitioner or doctor is interested in using them and you want to get them involved and get their recommendation and get their take on all of this. They are widely available.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Excellent information here, John. I sincerely appreciate you coming on. I mean, bone health is something that I will admit I get lost in the hormones and I forget about the bones. And this is something that we all need to be thinking about no matter what age we are, really. I truly believe it doesn't matter where you're at. You want to be thinking about your bones. So thank you so much for coming on, folks. We'll put everything in the podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. And I'm sure we'll be geeking out with Dr. John here a little bit in the future since he's got all kinds of great information. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.